Ladies and gentlemen, again, Jack Roush. Could you join us right here, Jack, please? Assigned seating. Jim Hagedorn, and Ray Fowler. I feel that these gentlemen do not need an introduction, but they have been here. Jack is the only person other than Bud Anderson who has been here for every program, I believe, for the last 20 years. So let me see. I think these guys threw a coin toss, and we said that Jim gets to start first and tell us a little bit about the current day flying of these aircraft. First of all, the old crow, the green old crow behind me.
The faux crow. That's not the real crow.
Okay. See, he's in control now. That's Jim Hagedorn. Okay, the faux crow behind me belongs to Jack Roush. The real old crow, the silver one, is Jim Hagedorn's D model aircraft. And the gentleman Jim aircraft is also Jack's, these beautiful airplanes. Thank you for bringing them here. Jim, let me know if you need me.
All right. Thanks. Hey, everybody. How are you doing? You know, it's all of us between you and Bud Anderson, so we'll try to go pretty quick. You know, I guess my crow, you know, when we started doing some NASCAR work at Scott's and people said, you want to meet Roush? And I was like, okay. So I go up there and he hands me a flight suit and says, let's go flying. And he puts me in his other airplane, his Gentleman Jim airplane. And which was the Glennis airplane, I guess, at the time. And I don't know this guy. I'm in the back seat. There's no controls. And
you're a check F-16 pilot. You're on your own.
Yeah. But next thing you know, we're down below the tree line, literally at V&E, you know, pushing like 500 miles an hour. And I'm thinking to myself, what have you done, you idiot? And so... Jack, I finally say, I got to have one of these. So it didn't have a bad effect on me. I got to have one. And he told me he'd sell me the Glennis airplane, which was kind of a more complete... I'm super happy with this airplane, better, I think. But he says, I'll sell it to you. But then he backed out.
I was going through a divorce. It was titled wrong.
Yeah, it was something about his divorce, and... said, you'll have to buy the old crow. And I said, okay. And he came and interviewed me. Can you guys hear me okay? He came and interviewed me like I was interviewing for a job. And he spent a lot of time telling me that I'm a custodian, a steward of some very important American history.
You came to understand that.
Yep, absolutely. But... he made me sign a contract that I would never change the name of the airplane without his permission. Now, he didn't tell me, while he did that, I'm building another phony old crow out of an old data plate he got down in Florida. And so he shows up with this, after like bending me over pretty hard, he then tells me like, oh, here's the new crow. And I'm like, that dude, that's some cheating. That's some low down, dirty, rotten stuff there. So he also made me go through a flight. Now, I was Air Force, F-16s, Embry-Riddle, flight instructor, all that stuff. And he made me go into like a training program where he said, look, I want you to start in a Cub, build tailwheel time. Then I want some heavy tailwheel time, 100 hours in a T-6 or equivalent. And he said, I'll give you to use, as long as you don't wreck it, my T-6, or what is the name you call them?
SNJ-5.
SNJ-5. And build 100 hours, and then you can go down and do Lee Lauterbach's course at in down in Kissimmee, and then you can take delivery of your airplane, which I did. So my last flight in the T-6, or the SNJ-5, I'm bringing it back up to Ypsilanti, where Jack lives. And, you know, there's no GPS in this thing. So it's like old school, like pilotage. So I'm just barely making it, you know, trying to like avoid Detroit's airspace, get it back to him. And like, I had my maps and everything tucked under. You know, like in a T6, if you drop it, it's way down in the frame in the floor. There's no way you're getting it back. So I drop my map. I don't even know the frequencies. It's like, what the hell? And next thing, this Mustang jumps my ass, and it's Roush. Yeah, that's so. The people here and Bud, and because Bud's the real deal. You know, I the finest compliment I think you can offer somebody is they're a real fighter pilot for people who are fighter pilots. You think so?
I do.
And so, you know, he's the real deal, and he's got some terrific stories, and every year we can listen to his sort of truth about the war. It's a good thing. Now, I told Connie that I was going to talk just a little bit about, you know, COVID's been a weird thing for flying. So my airplane's been down in Stuart, Florida for a while, went through annual, haven't flown it. I wanted to do some checkout work before I brought it up here, which was today. I had a board meeting yesterday I had to do. And the Comm Corps didn't work, and like so I haven't flown it in like probably 6 months, you know. And like I got to go to Oshkosh and then fly formation and do all this stuff, and you know, so I get a little nervous. You know, you hop into a 1,700 horsepower airplane from 1944, and you know, it's one of those things you got to think about when you crank it up and put the power on. And there was like big ass thunderstorms here, so which I was trying to beat in this morning. And so I get a little nervous, and I look at all the speeds and everything. And the thing is, the Mustang is just the most honest airplane ever. You know, it's scary. I know people get hurt in the airplane, but it really talks back. That's kind of what I wanted to tell you guys, is that, you know, if you listen to the airplane, it's just a really sweet airplane to fly. It'll do pretty much everything. You want to, if you try to stall it out, I don't know. Hopefully, there's a bunch of aviators here. You know, you can depart it. It'll kick back. You know, the Mustang will bite you if you let it. But it's just a really sweet airplane to fly. And I, you know, Ray's got a lot of experience flying other planes, but the support system that keeps me alive, or kind of sitting right here, Jack maintains my engine. Friend down in Florida does the airframe. Connie and her late husband Ed really introduced me and took care of me, because whether it's flying here or like Super Cubs in Idaho and Utah, it's pretty technical flying, you know. And I that's the one thing I would say about flying fighters is it's technical, and I like that part of flying, that it's technical. But if you're going to be doing technical flying, you need people who can give you advice, who've learned kind of the bad habits that could get you hurt. And these people here, I really owe my life to, including Ray. So, you know, I was a F-16 kid. I graduated college at Riddle, ROTC. I was probably one of the first 10 lieutenants. This is 1981, into the F-16 for 7 years. And that's a pretty sweet airplane to fly too, I think. You know, it's really the first airplane where you could focus outside the airplane, and the airplane was kind of programmed not to kill you. We had a couple problems early on when I was in, where the flight controls went bad and it just negative G'd over after a generator failure. And a lot of people got killed out at Hill, where I was my first duty station. But I've been very lucky to fly sweet airplanes and be with great people. And I think that's really it. This is an airplane you can get into, and if you have some basic flying skills, and you kind of remember the basics, you go through a good training program like Lauterbach runs down at Stallion, and you hang around with people who can keep the airplane functional. And then you fly Oshkosh. Just another quickie on Oshkosh. Oshkosh is really the only place where I flew three times today. Twice up here, we were four ship. Ray's our leader, and he's a fabulous leader, but nobody's really flying Mustangs the way they get flown up here. So you come up here, and it's really military-style, multi-ship airplanes, and we do some training, and I don't know, Ray, you want to talk about like what your objectives are when we fly?
Absolutely. Obviously, welcome back to Oshkosh, and we're all thrilled to be here and thrilled to be back at Warbirds in Review. Nowhere in the world do you get to see what we see. And what you don't see is when we leave the airport to go with these airplanes. And like he said, it is training because very rarely most air shows you go. I mean, how often do you go to an air show and see a single P-51 or a single Corsair? Or certainly some of the rare airplanes out here, you just don't see them. So when we get to go as a four ship or sometimes eight ship and beyond, it's amazing. So we get to come and go pretty much, whereas a lot of airplanes, they get to Oshkosh and they're like, man, I'm just glad I made it here. And the airplane's in one piece, and then they enjoy the show. We pretty much get a chance to go very early in the morning, so when a lot of people are still sleeping. This guy's a madman. I don't think he sleeps past like 3 o'clock in the morning on any given day. So I have to make myself get out of bed. But we usually brief at 5:30 in the morning, and we're turning props here at 6 o'clock in the morning to go fly, which is pure airspace for us to go play. If you're camping out here, you've probably heard the Mustangs wake you up many times in the morning.
Now, this morning, I did want to fly before they did, but Roush refuses to let people fly his airplane because they'll, you know, at 200 knots, it'll start taking the paint off the spinner and the prop. But, like, so we had to wait and wait and wait till Roush said it was safe for his propeller.
However, when you look at the Focro, look how beautiful the paint is on the leading edges and the props versus. So it does make a big difference. So we do everything we can to keep these airplanes, hence the keep them preserved. And when they're preserved, obviously they're they are show planes. So we do try to take care of them. So we only had to delay for 20 minutes, 30 minutes this morning, but we still had an amazing sortie. We go out, we do pitch outs, rejoins. We get to go with some of the younger people that are really new to the profession. And there's so many moving parts. I know all of you guys, you wouldn't be here if you're not enthusiasts. These airplanes fly because Jack, keeps the engines running in tip-shop top shape, which is amazing. When we climb in these airplanes, you think about, really what the, what your responsibility is to get the airplane back in one piece versus putting it in a museum. So to both Jack and to Jim, and to everybody here that really keeps airplanes flying, because every year, I think for the past decade, and I know Connie's done it, we've delivered airplanes to museums where they silence them and they never fly again. They either hang them from a ceiling or they sit there, and it's like going to the Dayton Museum. You see an amazing number of airplanes or Smithsonian. You know what they did. You know what they did for our freedoms and for everyone, but you'll never see them fly again. So to come up here to see them fly, to be involved, we also give rides, so a tower controller got a ride this morning with the, which was pretty amazing to go fly in the back seat of the airplane, and they get to see it from their end because they're obviously working very hard too. But again, we hope to continue to wake you guys up in the morning.
You got your own mic.
Now, I did take Ray's kid up, and he didn't say anything, but he looked kind of aroused when he got out of the airplane, dude.
My 16-year-old son got a chance to fly this morning with Jim, so. Obviously, I trust all these guys. How much time do you have in the Mustang, Jack? You actually flew the Mustang to races, didn't you? It was like your daily driver to go to NASCAR races. So you've got to probably have more Mustang time.
I've got an excess of 1,100 hours.
So 1,100 hours in a P-51. So that is incredible in itself. So just the resources that we get to be around up here is unbelievable. So. With that, I'm going to leave it to Jack because he is the most important and most interesting guy up here.